Well, hello, everyone. I'm back on the air after a couple of weeks off for surgery. Here's the rundown of what we're going to do. We'll get to open talk in the next hour of the program, and there's certainly a lot that I want to comment on that I haven't been here for the last couple of weeks to talk to you about, from the debt ceiling to who's running for president and all the rest of the mess that's going out there and the controversial issues of public importance. But right now, I'd like you to welcome Mark Dixon back to the program. He is the producer of YURT, Your Environmental Road Trip. During the course of this hour, we'll also talk to the director of the film, Ben Evans. They're going to have their Pittsburgh premiere on Tuesday, September 20th at the Eddy Theater at Chatham University. We'll talk more about the when, what, and why of that. But first, welcome Mark. Mark, welcome back. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Chris. Thanks so much for having me.
It is great to have you here. So you finally finished this road trip, huh?
We totally did. You know, we finished the road trip. You know, that seemed like the easiest part after going 5 years now to finish full production on the feature film.
And the bane of the independent filmmaker, right?
Yep, exactly. When you don't have a lot of money, it's going to take a lot of time. So we took a lot of time, and I think it turned out really well. We won the audience award at the premiere, the world premiere at the Yale Environmental Film Festival at Yale on April 2nd.
You've gotten into a couple of other film festivals and done well there too.
Yep. Well, we've gotten into a few others, and many of them haven't actually screened yet. So we're just in the process of getting into film festivals. We screened and had a great response at the Dead Center Film Festival. The audience really, really enjoyed it. Dallas Video Fest is coming up. We just screened at the Route 66 Film Festival. They had a special screening just for YURT, and the audience just loved it, ate it up. Flagstaff Mountain Film Festival, Southern Appalachian International Film Festival, all these things coming up. Not to mention, we had a wonderful big premiere in Louisville just a few weeks back.
Okay, how did you, Ben Evans, and his wife Julie get involved in this whole idea of going on some sort of environmental road trip and finding people out there who are doing good things that ought to have a spotlight shine on them that might help us all coexist on this planet environmentally?
Yeah, well, we each came to it from a little different perspective. You know, I was trying to save up to buy a house in California, and I was looking at business school and working a job at a tech.
You know what happens to Pittsburghers who move to California?
Yeah. Oh,
they end up coming back home. No, I'm kidding.
Well, you know, it's true, actually. From everything I've heard, and I'm back because I love it, but I was in California in Silicon Valley, and really, I actually attended a green festival and saw all these charts and diagrams of all the species that were being lost, you know, fish in the sea, and how it's just a fraction of what we used to have in the ocean, and, you know, we're losing topsoil, and we're running out of fossil fuels, and all these sorts of things that seemed like they could really take hold in my lifetime. And for a while, I thought, you know, oh, climate change and peak oil and things like that, that won't happen to me. Maybe my kids, maybe, if it's going to happen. And about 2004, 2005, it really dawned on me that these were issues that I need to tackle, understand, and learn how to tackle in my lifetime.
And so you and Ben jumped in this, and Julie too, jumped in this environmentally better for the environment, at least car, and started to tour around and see who was doing what. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we knew that it's kind of an oxymoron to take an environmental road trip, so we tried to take the smallest car that served all our needs. We had a Ford Escape Hybrid, and we ended up getting about 32 miles per gallon. A lot of people asked us how it ran. It ran great. And then we hit the road and went for a year to all 50 states and talked to hundreds and hundreds of people, almost 1,000 people in every state, about almost every kind of environmental issue you could think of.
Now, in a moment, we're going to talk to Scott Broussard, who's been on this program too, from the Solo Roadways Project. But what did you find as a filmmaker, one of the most interesting environmental projects that you uncovered and showed?
Yeah, one of the most interesting that we encountered, for me in particular, was the Land Institute in Kansas, founded by Wes Jackson several decades ago. He's working to perennialize annual monoculture, to perennialize and turn it into a polyculture. So basically,
Monsanto just won't be happy with that. The Terminator seeds just...
Yeah, these plants, you don't even need to seed them every year. They just keep growing every year over and over and over again, and you harvest it every year. You plant a crop once, and then you mow it every year, and then you eat the food that comes from it, and that's all you do. You know,
can we feed the Earth's population like that?
I think that you could. They actually did some early yield tests and came up equal, if not slightly more more yield using their techniques than traditional agriculture.
We'll have to get him as a guest on the program. So now about the premiere here in Pittsburgh, what's the big news? What's the big preparation that's going on for September?
Yeah. Well, you know, it was amazing. We started the road trip at the Rachel Carson homestead on the 100th year anniversary of her birth. And we're delighted to be screening the premiere of the Yurt film in Pittsburgh at the Rachel Carson Institute at Eddy Theater at Chatham University. It's sponsored by the Rachel Carson Institute, and they're hosting us there. The Pittsburgh community has been so supportive of this film through so many years. It's the only way that we could really say thank you, thank you, thank you. Parkhurst Dining is going to be offering some light refreshments at the event. Penn Future, the environmental group here, Citizens for Pennsylvania's Future, is going to be sponsoring it, and we've got a bunch of different groups there, and we'll be creating a calendar of events for the fall of all sorts of different green events. So if you come to the film, you like what you see, you like the groups that are sponsoring it, you can get an understanding real easily with a little flyer that shows what else is going on in Pittsburgh the rest of the season.
Now, the solar roadways, we'll talk to Scott in just a second about that, but we've had him on the show before, and can you give us just a little bit of an outline of what that is like, what he's trying to do?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you think that someone who says something like solar roadways is just crazy, and when we're traveling on the road trip, we thought, well, there's this guy in Idaho, he's working on this thing called solar roads. Maybe he is crazy, maybe he's not. We got to find out. And basically, he's putting solar panels inside of a roadway and covering it with glass, glass that Dr. Pantano, who's a material science professor at Penn State, says is, you know, eminently possible. We know how to do this with glass. The only thing is actually just getting the research together to pull it off.
It can have the tensile strength of concrete and could stand up to an 80,000-pound 18-wheeler, locking them up at 80 miles an hour, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can do all the things that a road needs to do. And so Scott's been working on this for several years. We first met him early in his project. And he's since gotten a big grant. The government's given a grant for $750,000 to continue work on his project. And we're thrilled with the news. We think that it's a really interesting project that gets people's attention and encourages them to think at a systems level. You know, we've got such big financial problems in America and investment problems, and where do we put our money and what do we spend it on to build for the next generation? And his project is the kind of project that I think we're going to need to look at much more seriously if we really want to dig ourselves out of this.
All right. We're going to talk to Scott Broussard of the Solar Roadways Project after this break. We'll also play you a little clip of the film that deals with his project, and we'll talk to him, too. We thought this would be a good way to come back and talk about some solutions, not just examine the problems that we face out there, but talk about some of the solutions that we might discover through looking at your environmental road trip. Yurt. That's some acronym, man. All right, let's take this break and we'll come back with Scott.
It's the Moore of Pittsburgh. The Chris Moore Show. News Radio 1020. KDKA.
We're talking about Yurt, your environmental road trip. Let's play a clip from that that deals with Scott Broussard. In fact, this is Scott Broussard from the Solar Roadways Project. Take a listen.
In December of 2007, a ton of liquid asphalt was $175. We're getting quotes at over $1,000 a ton now. Asphalt has gone up so much because it's petroleum-based, I don't believe we're going to have the ability to build asphalt roads in 50 years. What we're proposing is a road that pays for itself over its lifespan. Not only pay for itself, but provide a whole slew of new features.
Welcome to Solar Roadways.
There's 25,000 square miles of road surfaces, parking lots, and driveways in the lower 48 states. If we covered that with solar panels with just a 15% efficiency, we produce three times more electricity than this country uses on an annual basis. And that's almost enough to power the entire world. Roads are...
That's just a section of the film. And Scott Broussard from Solar Roadways, welcome to the program. Mark Dixon, the producer, is here in the studio with us. How have you been since the last time we talked, Scott?
Real good, Chris. How you been?
All right. I understand that you all have just released the announcement of some more major funding for you to move to the next level. Tell us what's happening.
We did. We finished our phase one research last year and submitted our final report. And they liked the results and what we're doing, and so much they invited us back to apply for round two funding. So we did that earlier this year, and we got the announcement for the contract last year, which is a phase two, $750,000 two-year research contract.
Now, you making this stuff out of sand? Is that an oversimplification?
No, we will purchase glass.
But I mean, glass is essentially made out of a product that's abundant as opposed to asphalt and the material to make concrete and that kind of thing, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So what would be the advantages off the bat of constructing our parking lots, roadways, or anything else out of this material that you'd have LED lights in and could light up and be pressure sensitive and could stand up to a tractor trailer at 80,000 pounds locking its brakes at 80 miles an hour?
Correct. Well, currently your roads, your parking lots, anything made out of asphalt is basically, or concrete, is basically sitting there baking in the sun. You don't get anything out of it. An example I like to give is if you have your driveway redone or new house built,
mm-hmm.
when they make that driveway out of either asphalt or concrete, when you sign the check over to the contractor and when he drives off, that money's gone forever. You don't get any of that back. Whereas if instead you did your parking lot or your driveway with solar road panels, the minute they're hooked up, it starts feeding your building or your home with power. It starts paying itself off immediately.
And
in addition, there's all kinds of, for instance, if you're in Pittsburgh, right? You're in a northern climate.
Mm-hmm.
We're in North Idaho, so we get a lot of snow.
Mm-hmm.
There's a heating element inside the glass similar to what's in the rear window of your car. So instead of coming out in the morning and having to shovel your driveway, you come out and it's nice and clear. So no more snow removal. That's a safety feature for your roads. No more chemicals being thrown on the roads. No more need for snow plows. The LEDs inside the glass that you mentioned will become your road lines or your parking lines, so that, for instance, I'm in my 50s now, I'm losing my night vision. It's difficult for me to see on this long, winding, mountainous road I live on at night. You throw some rain in there, it's almost impossible. But this lights up the road lines. It'd be like driving on a video game or like an airport runway.
It sounds like a lot of major advantages. Any disadvantages that you've run across in your efforts to produce these plates that would make up the roadway?
No, we haven't. Part of phase two, the bulk of phase two would be focusing on that surface, making it resistant to those 80,000-pound trucks. We're building a parking lot here in our own facility. We'll be part of our phase two prototyping. So we'll have a 36-foot stretch of road outside our building here. And that particular road will be able to withstand 160,000 pounds, which is twice the legal limit of the 18-wheelers. But I've talked to other people, you know, loggers in the area. We're logging industry here, and they say, we load those trucks, we just guess, and might be miles from the nearest, you know, weigh station. So be ready for heavier than what you're expecting. So we're actually thinking about going up to 250,000 pounds.
Now, I understand that you've talked with people, including here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, the University of Pennsylvania or somewhere, with scientists who say that this is totally feasible. But last time you were here, there were a lot of naysayers who were saying, what is wrong with this guy? What kind of pie in the sky thinking is he using? And I'm sure you must be used to all the naysayers out there, but you continue with this project. What makes you believe in it so much?
Oh, it's just the naysayers are the uneducated, really, and we don't even hear that much from them anymore. And when we first started talking about this, we got a lot of that because it was just an idea in the beginning. And then we started getting more and more people on board, engineers, glass experts, things like that, and you're talking about Penn State University's Materials Research Institute, which is the number one materials lab in the nation. The director, Carlo Pantano, is now on our board of advisors. He wrote part of our final phase one report on the feasibility of this project. We've got letters from all kinds of scientists and all kinds of letters behind their names, and nobody's saying there's anything wrong with this or can't be done, except people who just don't like change. So in the beginning, we got a lot of that, a lot of the naysayers, but then after we got that phase one contract from the Federal Highway Administration, people kind of stood back and said, wait a minute, maybe they're onto something here. And I like to tell people that a phase one is sort of like you can BS your way through a job interview. Same way you can write your phase one application. But getting that phase two, you know, pleasing them with your results and getting invited back to that phase two is like getting a good progress report after 6 months on the job.
Mm-hmm.
you're on to something. So when we got to phase two, everybody just kind of perked up and said, oh, wow, they're serious. They're doing this. They're building a parking lot now. And, you know, we kid around a little bit and tell people we're on a mission from God, but really we feel it's a very spiritual journey for us that God has given us and dropped it in our lap, and we're just running with it.
And how is the federal government responding so far when they come to look at your prototypes and all the rest? Do they see the promise of what the words say?
Yes. Matter of fact, we had just last month the chief operations officer and the chief engineer of the Idaho Transportation Department come and pay us a visit. And we demonstrated the phase one prototype, and they sat and talked, and, you know, technical talk for a couple hours, and afterwards they invited us to come and address the Idaho Transportation Board 2 days later. And I did, and I gave them a presentation. And they wrote us a letter of interest that what they want to use these for are rest areas and ports of entry. So rather than having trucks pull over to be weighed, they could theoretically just keep driving, and our road would weigh them as they go.
Mm.
And that would, I never realized this, but just a rest area, just a simple bathroom with the lights and a vending machine, the transportation department has to pay for that electric bill, and they're all over the state. So they're hoping that if we can retrofit the parking lot, it will power that building and more.
Now, it sounds like a lot of promise there for this whole project. Is there a website people can go to and look at and see what you're working on?
Yes, it's just solarroadways.com. And we've got some of Mark's videos. Mark's video is there. There's several pictures of the prototype, phase one prototype. And we'll be posting more pictures as we progress through our phase two research.
All right. Scott Broussard is the co-founder of Solar Roadways. We're going to continue talking to both he and Mark Dixon. We're going to be joined in the next portion of our program by Ben Evans, who is the director of Your Environmental Road Trip. We'll do all of that after this break. Stay with us right here on KDKA.
Got issues? Talk to Chris.
The Chris Moore Show.
Chris Moore, News Radio 1020, KDKA.
KDK Radio News Time 4:32. We're talking to Mark Dixon, who is the producer of YURT, Your Environmental Road Trip, featured in that film that's also going to premiere here in Pittsburgh Tuesday, September 20th, 2011, at 7 p.m. at the Eddy Theater on Chatham University's campus. There'll be a screening that is followed by a discussion with the filmmakers, including Mark Dixon and Ben Evans. If you were listening closely to the CBS news break, you heard that they are having some power outages in the Louisville area, and that is where Ben Evans is, and we can't get a hold of him right now. But, Scott, I'd just like to go back to you, sir, to ask you about electric cars. I see there's a lot being made about electric cars, and you think that the Solar Roadways project could be used to extend their range. Is that correct?
Correct. Right now, I mean, we've talked to a lot of electric vehicle owners, and they all love their cars. But the one Achilles heel that an electric vehicle has is if you have to take it back home and plug it in at night. And there's really no infrastructure for that just yet. I hear they're popping up with EV charging stations here and there. But if you think of what a solar roadway does, it's an electric road. You could pull over anywhere and plug in. I mean, even if you just do rest stops like I was talking about here in Idaho. If, for instance, you're in Pittsburgh, if you have an EV, you're not going to take a family vacation to California.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to run out of juice about 3 hours down the road. But if all you had to do is look for a rest stop to pull over and charge, or a parking lot of, say, a fast food chain like McDonald's, if all you have to do is find the Golden Arches, pull over and recharge your vehicle, then you can. It's now a practical car. You can take it anywhere an internal combustion engine can go.
Not only that, it seems to me businesses, you mentioned McDonald's, but businesses would want to use that as a draw for people to pull over.
Exactly.
It sounds like a winner to me. All right, I understand that we have Ben on the line now, so let's see if we can get him to join us. Ben Evans, who's the director of YURT, Your Environmental Road Trip. Hello, welcome to Pittsburgh. How are you, Ben?
Hey, Chris, good. I'm doing well.
All right, how did that premiere go in Louisville?
Oh, it was great, man. It was awesome. Two packed houses, lots of laughter, tears, standing ovation. It was really just wonderful to be able to share it with my little hometown here that's been so supportive throughout all of it. So,
When you and Mark decided to put this whole thing together, I asked Mark earlier, what was the thing that he discovered as you profiled or shined a light on people like Scott Broussard and others who are doing things about the environment that could make our world better? What was the best thing you discovered?
Oh, man. Well, you know, one of the really cool things that we experiences we had was we got to go and visit Joel Salatin on his farm. And he was a little bit of a farming rock star now. He was profiled in The Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan. And he's got this just incredible farm down there where he's really thinking holistically and using essentially the waste product of one animal to sort of as a food source for another animal. That's maybe putting it a little bluntly, but basically he's got his whole farm working here together. So the chickens follow behind the cows. They sanitize the paddock behind the cows by, you know, eating the flies and larvae out of the cow manure. He's got his pigs rooting through the cow manure for fermented corn to feed themselves, but they're also then basically turning over his compost, turning over the manure and the straw and turning it into soil fertilizer for him to put back on the fields. And he's got this incredible stat that he quoted us about being able to sequester all the carbon since the beginning of the industrial age in less than 10 years if everybody in America farmed this way, which blew our minds. We thought, there's no way that's true. And but in making the film, we researched it really carefully, and we went and actually found the paper that says just that. And in fact, he's actually conservative in that estimate. So it wouldn't even take that long if everybody were really doing it the way he's doing it.
Well, that would be a great boon to humankind around the world, I would think. But I wonder how the big agribusiness farms look at that. It just doesn't seem to fit in with their plans. I remember my father-in-law in Arkansas, a country gentleman farmer with about 12 to 30 head of cattle and a couple of hogs. When they first put a big operation, a hog farm in there, he said it was the most devilish thing he'd ever seen in his life. And this is just a simple man with no education, but who had been raising animals all his life. He couldn't believe how they had them packed in there shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of where I think at humankind, at least here in America, we've kind of gone off the rails a little bit. We just look at the pounds of beef per acre. We don't look at the whole picture. And so Joel's really looking at the whole picture. And so even if he's not generating quite as many sort of pounds of beef per acre, which actually he's generating a ton, but even if he weren't, he's getting all kinds of other things, all these free services from the animals on his farm that he doesn't have to spend fossil fuel on fertilizer or plowing the fields. He doesn't have to spray it with pesticides. There are all these inputs that he doesn't have to worry about, and that doesn't really show up a lot of times on the ledger in industrial farming. So we've managed to take something that, as he says, is elegantly simple, the relationship between, say, cows and the land that they live on, and separate it and create two problems out of what was once an elegant solution.
Mark, when you and Ben profile these kinds of solutions to the environmental problems that are out there, how do you hope people who view your film will latch onto it and get involved? What do you want them to do?
For every single person, and some of the feedback that we got from the Louisville premiere was that it really inspired people to take that one next step. Whatever had been lingering in their minds that, oh gosh, you know, I really ought to do this kind of thing, or I really would love to do this, I just don't have the time. The film seems to inspire them to actually take that next step and just go a little bit greener. So it moves people along that path in a really joyful, fun way.
Scott, I imagine your effort is going to be larger than individual contributors jumping on the bandwagon. You're going to have to convince everybody from federal officials who oversee the roadways to businesses to everything else. What's going to happen with your demonstration project, which I understand is going to be a parking lot? How are you going to work that? What's going to happen?
That'll give us something. Right now we have the phase one prototype, but it's very crude. It's just basically a light show. People come, they like to see. Let me back up. I did a presentation out at Booz Allen Hamilton a couple years ago, and they said, you know how kids like to push buttons and see lights light up? So do congressmen and senators. Give them something they can get their hands on. That's what we built.
Maybe you could design something for the deficit, too.
There you go. But what this will give us is an actual working, functioning parking lot with the stormwater distribution, the melting ice, the everything, and it'll be powering our building. And what it'll be is, like, if you came and visited, you and I could walk across this parking lot and I could press a button and, you know, say, "Welcome, Chris," or whatever we want to say. And press another button, reconfigure the road lines and show how easy that's done. I can show how the rainwater gets cleaned and sent out to our pond where our fish are. You know, it's a whole lot. It's when I used to give presentations prior to having animations, I'd get a lot of the deer in the headlight look. We threw some animations up there and you could see the light bulbs going off in people's heads. Okay, that's what he's talking about. And this will give us a full-size, well, a parking lot, a fully functioning solar parking lot where they can actually stand on it and see how it works.
I've interviewed farmers like Richard Bird in Fayette County, who's a grain farmer, who asked me the question when we were talking to him about farming and food and where our food is going to come from. Do we really need another mall, parking lot, rain runoff water? Is that a good use of the land? And I'd like for all of you to chime in on that. Scott, you can start.
What we're doing is that rain's going to hit that parking lot anyways. And usually it just gets washed off, and that's what you call stormwater. It picks up whatever dropped out of the bottom of your cars, your oil, your antifreeze, all this other garbage. And it usually just gets dumped off the side of the parking lot somewhere. A lot of places just goes right in the nearest body of water, which would be your creeks or your rivers or whatever, and winds up down the ocean. What we're looking to do is capture that stormwater, use it for heating and cooling of the road surface, and clean it, and then resend this potable water back out to an agricultural center or an aquifer.
It sounds like it makes sense on the surface of it to me. I don't need to push a button. The light's going off in my head already.
I mean, the cool thing about Scott's invention here is that these areas are already paved. You know, we've already sort of paved paradise, so to speak. And so why pave any more when we don't have to? And so he's really leveraging the sort of areas of the country that have already been industrialized and saying, okay, how can we get as much out of these areas that, you know, they're not going to be a wilderness area anytime soon. So how can we get as much out of them to sort of run the rest of our lives as we can? And it's a brilliant solution. You run into, you know, the ideas of installing these huge solar farms out in Arizona, and there's this big quandary of like, oh, but we're going to, you know, some endangered species is going to have its habitat ruined, and, you know, and environmentalists are up in arms, but the clean energy people are up in arms. Well, this solves that problem to some degree. You know, we're making good use of space that's already sort of industrialized.
So it's sort of like a home improvement then. If you added a hot water heating, solar heating system to your house, it's a space that already exists. You've just made it better.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of requests from homeowners wanting to put this, especially in the northern climates, wanting to... Well, for instance, I've got one of my engineers is half owner of a convenience station. It's a standard size 24-hour gas station convenience store. And he says his monthly electric bill is $4,000.
Wow.
So he's looking toward the day when he can retrofit his own parking lot with our solar road panels.
And what would the cost of that? What would that cost of retrofitting be?
We really can't say just yet. Mm-hmm. We're really in development. If we give a number out, we say $10,000 for a 12-foot by 12-foot section, but that's just our upper limit. That's what we're not going to go beyond. I'm sure when we get into manufacturing, it'd be half that.
So in 3 months, he'd recoup his investment, and then after that, it'd be paying off. If those figures held up.
It will take, I don't know how long it's been, how big your parking lot is, how long it would take to pay it off. We calculated the average American home, and I've got all this on a frequently asked questions page, but it would take about 4 such panels to provide all the power that an average American home uses.
All right. We'll come back and ask you what that page is in just a second. We're talking about your environmental road trip. It's going to have a big premiere Tuesday, September 20th at the Eddy Theater at 7 p.m. A screening is going to be followed with the filmmakers. 2 of them are here with us, and we're talking about it. If you'd like to talk about it, too, in the next segment of our program, 1-866-391-1020. The number again, toll-free, wherever you might hear my voice, is 1-866-391-1020. We're examining the possible.
The Chris Moore Show, News Radio 1020, KDKA.
Don't want to give you the blues right here. In fact, we want to cheer you up. As a matter of fact, Mark, what do you call this film, you and Ben? What do you call it?
Well, I think people have been calling this the film this to us. They say it's an environmental antidepressant. They finally have a feature film that they can go see that's about the environment that's not depressing.
I can tell you from having lain at home, as the doctor ordered for 2 weeks, TV is very depressing and repetitive, and the only place you can find something really is on the internet that cheers you up, or somebody like you guys who are doing, or Scott, who are doing bright ideas that lend toward the future. Now, for the premiere in September, do you have to reserve tickets, Mark?
Yes, you do. And you can go do that at yert.com, and that's spelled Y-E-R-T.com, to go reserve your ticket there.
Okay. Anything you want to add to that, Ben?
Just it's a fun time. You know, we really worked hard to try to bring a sense of humor to some pretty serious issues. And in trying to do that, we put ourselves through some crazy challenges along the trip. So we really wanted to personalize sustainability. So we kept all of our trash with us in the car for the entire year, including recyclables. So all of our garbage stayed with us in the car for the whole year. We had to limit ourselves to one shoebox per month for all three of us for all of our trash and recyclables. We had a compost bin with us in the car. We did other challenges like never turning on an incandescent light. My wife got pregnant on the trip, and so that 3 months in, that threw things for a loop and made the challenges even more challenging. So it's really a sort of unexpected, fun whirlwind tour across the country, and a really hopeful and we hope insightful and inspiring movie.
Well, I'm going to be plugging the Pittsburgh premiere Tuesday, September 20th at 7 p.m. And, Mark, you say you have to go to the website to reserve your tickets at the Eddy Theater on Chatham's campus?
Yep, yert.com. I also wanted to add that the film has a lot of really fun music in it. Ben's really great with music, and he's done a wonderful job of pulling together a fun, inspiring collection of music that really rocks and rolls along the whole duration of the film.
A real antidepressant, environmental antidepressant.
A musical antidepressant.
Well, sometimes the environmental, it can be so heavy, whether you're trying to save the Chesapeake Bay watershed or Marcellus Shale drilling or anything. It can be very depressing, but this is a good but lighthearted look at it, and it's very serious at the same time. We've got something from the Dollar Bank Instant Access Center. CA is written from the north side. Thank goodness that I've been away because of that. I didn't cook the contaminated turkey that I purchased. The factory farming methods have to stop. That has to do with, I guess, something that we were talking about earlier with one of the profiles that's in the Yurt movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to the phones, and we'll go at 1-866-391-1020 to Duquesne and Steve. Steve, you're on KDK.
Hey, welcome back, Chris.
Thank you.
Hey, amen to what you said about television, too. People like your guests are the real rock stars right now. You can have American Idol and that other tripe.
Amen.
I'd like to address a question to Scott. Scott, your project's been intriguing from the first time I heard you on Chris's program. And given the time frame that you've been working on, I'm sure you've seen technological developments in some of the aspects of the different elements in your particular product. Looking at return on investment and the rapid pace of technology, do you see your panels in place being upgradable?
Actually, they're going to be pretty much hermetically sealed. But what we do is, for instance, if we were to start paving someone tomorrow with the technology we have today, it would take, we're hoping to have the lifespan be about 20 years. And if we start manufacturing today, we'd probably use right off the shelf 15% efficient solar cells, for instance. 20 years from now, when we refurbish that, you don't throw it away. You just refurbish it, recycle most of it. And we would put whatever the efficiency of that day is. It might be 60% 20 years from now. We don't know. If it's 60%, then that same panel will produce four times more energy than it did the day before. And that way we can keep up with the rising demand for electricity.
So you actually see an equation where you have the return on investment for a given life of this product that makes it a viable product for someone that might be interested in it, that they can look past the fact that solar technology may evolve into something much more efficient in the period of time that it's installed. It's still to their advantage to install this product.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you very much, and good luck.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I'd also like to add that, you know, the real brilliance that I like to note in Scott's road design is that it really combines the infrastructure for your roadways, combines the infrastructure of your roadways with your power generation, with your power distribution, with, you know, the lot of trucks that you need to push the snow off the edges. All these different features of his road are all separate departments in the government right now. You got the Department of Transportation, you got the Department of Energy, and they all sort of work in their own separate ways. This brings them all together. So the cost, the independent cost that the old way of doing it has, is very high if you merge them all into one thing, which is a challenge, of course, politically. But if you can do that, there are some amazing cost savings that you reap, and makes the product that much more viable financially.
Scott, I know you're busy, but you're going to have to develop something for the politicians that could show them how they could reduce the size of government by pushing some of these buttons and have something light up, as Mark was just alluding to. And maybe the lights will actually go off in their heads and they can work on these matters that they tell us are so important now.
We're hoping so. Matter of fact, we talked to our local congressman the other day, and he wants us to head the Boise. He's on the Energy Commission in the state of Idaho and wants us to address his commission. So that might be a good starting point.
That would be great. I think it's getting the leaders of this country who have the money to fund the kinds of works that you are doing and the others that are profiled in the Yurt film that is going to make the difference. And unless they see the wisdom of what you're doing and see the bright minds that are out there, that America does have a can-do attitude still, you know, that we could manufacture this stuff here in the United States and not from China, how many people we could put to work with all the stuff that's profiled in the film is something else that we're not talking about, especially with the jobs and the recession, the double dip, as some people call it, we're having right now.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It's, you know, the we can solve the environmental crisis and the employment crisis or the unemployment crisis kind of all at once if we just get on the ball. That's part of what I think was a little hard. You know, there's part of me that wishes that Obama had gone after climate change and clean energy sort of harder initially. You know, there's a lot of even healthcare issues that get solved, you know, when we're growing our food better and we have cleaner air and water and land. So, you know, we'll see. Hopefully, you know, people can get on board, but it's a win-win for sure.
Mark, one more time, I want you to talk about how you can get tickets for the premiere at the Eddy Theater on Chatham's campus on September 20th.
Yep, we're really delighted. The Rachel Carson Institute is hosting this screening, and you can go get tickets for the event. You've got to reserve a ticket because we do expect it to fill up. You go to yert.com, Y-E-R-T.com, and there'll be a link there to reserve your ticket.
All right, let's squeeze one more call in. Bruce in the South Hills, hello, go ahead.
Hey, Scott. Hi, Chris. How you doing?
All right.
All right.
A question for Scott. I just read in the Sunday paper where Governor Corbett's slowly eliminating all the programs for renewable energy here in Pennsylvania. He's kind of like wiping out these programs. Is that going to affect your thing at all?
No, it won't. That sounds like a state program.
Yeah, it is.
We're being funded by the
renewable energy programs are in place.
We're being funded by the Federal Highway Administration.
Oh, okay. So you're federally funded.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bruce. I just hope you don't fall victim to some of this budget deficit cutting mania, especially in the areas that we really need it. We've got about a minute left, and I'd like for you all to give us your last words. Scott, would you start, please, and give us the website again where we can learn more about solar roadways?
Our website is solarroadways.com. And there's all kinds of pages. I go through the numbers. There's a frequently asked questions page, a little bit of everything. So plan on spending some time there.
Okie dokie. And Ben, anything that you'd have us know about Julie and little Bailey?
Well, Bailey just turned 3, and Julie's doing well. The family's happy and healthy. And I would just say, slightly off topic, I think that until we get money out of politics, a lot of these problems are going to be intractable. So I always recommend that we try to push for publicly funded elections or something close to that. Whenever people ask what can they do,
that is not off topic for this show. Let me tell you, I'll be talking about it next. And Mark, we'll give you 30 seconds with the last word.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I think that if you come to the film, if you come to this premiere, you'll get a healthy dose of stories that are telling the story from a different perspective from what you hear on the news all the time. The people with all the money are going to tell you stories that support a way forward that keeps them with all the money. And so we've got to take a leap of faith that there are other stories worth telling about how we can live into the future, and that's what we're doing with Yurt, and it's a lot of fun.
And quickly, how can they get their tickets?
YERT.com. Just go there and you'll find the link.
All right. Thank you a lot. Gentlemen, I really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again in the future, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.